workplace demands no less. When companies replace, or at least augment, the annual review with ongoing conversations and real-time feedback, they're better able to make improvements throughout the year. Alignment and transparency become everyday imperatives. When employees are struggling, their managers don't sit and wait for some scheduled day of reckoning. They jump into tough discussions like firefighters without hesitation. It might sound almost too easy, but continuous performance management will lift every individual's achievement. It elevates performance bottom to top. It works wonders for morale and personal development, for leaders and contributors alike. And when leveraged with the quarterly goals and built-in tracking of OKRs, it can be even more powerful. In this transitional moment, more organizations are broadening their evaluations with alternative criteria like competencies and team play. Many are now writing parallel tracks with annual reviews alongside of continuous performance management and ongoing conversations. And this balance of old and new thinking can work really well for larger companies in particular, some of whom may be happy to live there forever. Others will cut the cord and drop their ratings and rankings for more transparent, collaboratively developed, multidimensional review criteria. Let me compare and contrast annual performance management with continuous performance management. In the annual management, you get annual feedback. With continuous management, you get continuous feedback. Annual performance management is tied to compensation, whereas continuous performance management is decoupled from compensation. Annual performance management is directing, autocratic, and outcome-focused. Continuous performance management is coaching, democratic, and process-focused. Annual performance management focuses on weaknesses. Continuous performance management is strength-based. In sum, annual performance management is prone to bias, whereas continuous performance management is fact-driven. Continuous performance management at PACT. PACT, the Washington, D.C.-based international trade and development nonprofit. They have seen firsthand the synergy between OKRs and continuous performance management. Tim Staffa, a PACT director, says, quote, "We embraced OKRs because of our performance management process was moving to a more frequent cadence. When PACT adopted OKRs, we officially killed our annual performance review. We replaced it with a set of more frequent touch points between managers and employees. Internally, we've dubbed this Propel, and it consists of four elements. The first is a set of monthly one-on-one conversations between employees and their managers about how things are going. The second is a quarterly review of progress against our OKRs. We sit down and say, what did you set out to accomplish this quarter? What were you able to do, and what weren't you able to do? Why or why not? What can we change? Third, we have a semi-annual professional development conversation. Employees talk about their career trajectory, where they've been, where they are, where they want to go, and how their managers in the organization can support their new direction. The fourth bit is ongoing self-driven insight. We're constantly surrounded by positive reinforcement and feedback, but many of us haven't been trained to seek it out. Say you give a presentation to your team. After the fact, somebody comes up to you and says, hey, nice job. But most of us would say, oh, great, thanks, and move on. But we want to probe a little deeper. Thank you. What one thing did you like about it? The idea is, let's capture more specific feedback in real time. Let's talk about an amicable divorce. For companies moving to continuous performance management, the first step is straightforward. Divorce compensation, both raises and bonuses, from OKRs. These should be two distinct conversations with their own cadences and calendars. The first conversation about compensation is backward-looking, typically held at year's end. The second conversation is an ongoing, forward-looking dialogue between leaders and contributors, and it centers on five questions. One, what are you working on? Two, How are you doing, and how are your OKRs coming along? 3, is there anything impeding your work? 4, what do you need from me to be more successful? And 5, how do you need to grow to achieve your career goals? Now, I'm not proposing that performance reviews and goals can or should be completely severed. A data-driven summary of what someone has achieved can be a welcome antidote to ratings and biases. And since OKRs reflect a person's most meaningful work, they're a source of reliable feedback for the cycle to come. But when goals are used and abused to set compensation, employees can be counted on to sandbag. They start playing defense. They stop stretching for amazing. They get bored for lack of challenge. And the organization suffers most of all. Now, let's say contributor A sets extreme stretch goals and somehow attained 75% of them. Does her outperformance merit 100% of her bonus, or even 120%? Contributor B, by contrast, reaches 90% of his key results, but his manager knows that he didn't push himself. And what's more, he blew off several important team meetings. Should he get a larger bonus than contributor A? The short answer is no. Not if you want to preserve initiative and morale. At Google, according to Laszlo Bock, OKRs amount to a third or less of performance ratings. They take a backseat to feedback from cross-functional teams, and most of all, to context. It's always possible, even with a goal-setting system, to get the goals wrong, Laszlo says. Maybe the market does something crazy, or a client leaves their job, and suddenly you have to rebuild from scratch. You try to keep all of that in consideration. Google is careful to segregate raw goal scores from compensation decisions. Their OKR numbers are actually wiped from the system after each cycle. The formula has yet to be invented for complex human behavior, because that's where human judgment comes in. In today's workplace, OKRs and compensation can still get along. They can be friends. They'll never totally lose touch, but they no longer live together, and it's healthier that way. Conversations. Peter Drucker was one of the first to stress the value of regular one-on-one meetings between managers and their direct reports. Andy Grove estimated that 90 minutes of a manager's time can enhance the quality of your subordinate's work for 2 weeks. Ahead of the curve, as usual, Andy made one-on-ones mandatory at Intel. The point of the meeting, he wrote.
The meeting's main purpose is mutual teaching and exchange of information. By talking about specific problems and situations, the supervisor teaches the subordinate his skills and know-how and suggests ways to approach things. At the same time, the subordinate provides the supervisor with detailed information about what he's doing and what he's concerned about, and what is learned is absolutely essential if the supervisor is to make good decisions. A key point about one-on-one. It should be regarded as the subordinate's meeting with its agenda and tones set by him. What is the role of the supervisor in a one-on-one? He should facilitate the subordinate's expression of what's going on and what's bothering him. The supervisor should also encourage the discussion of heart-to-heart issues during one-on-ones, because this is the perfect forum for getting at subtle and deep work-related problems affecting his subordinate. Is he satisfied with his own performance? Does some frustration or obstacle gnaw at him? Does he have doubts about where he's going?
With contemporary tools to track and coordinate frequent conversations, Grove's tenets are more timely than ever. Effective one-on-ones dig beneath the surface of day-to-day work. They have a set cadence, from weekly to quarterly, depending on need. Based on BetterWorks' experience with hundreds of enterprises, there have emerged 5 critical areas of conversation between manager and contributor. 1 is goal setting and reflection, where the employee's OKR plan is set for the coming cycle. The discussion focuses on how best to align individual objectives and key results with organizational priorities. 2, ongoing progress updates, which are brief, data-driven check-ins on the employee's real-time progress with problem-solving as needed. Progress updates entail really two basic questions: what's working well and what's not working well. Third, two-way coaching to help contributors reach their potential and managers do a better job. Fourth, career growth to develop skills, identify growth opportunities, and expand employees' vision of their future at the company. Fifth, lightweight performance reviews, a feedback mechanism to gather inputs and summarize what the employee has accomplished since the last meeting in the context of the organization's needs. And note, this conversation is held apart from the employee's annual compensation performance review. As workplace conversations become integral, managers are evolving from taskmasters to teachers, coaches, and mentors. Say the head of product has waffled over a design decision, putting a product release date in jeopardy. Before the next executive team meeting, an effective CEO coach might say, "Can you think about how to be more decisive in this setting? What if you laid out the two best options, but made your own preference clear? Do you think you could do that?" If the product head agrees, there is a plan. Unlike negative criticism, coaching trains its sights on future improvement. Feedback. In her instant classic, Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead, Sheryl Sandberg notes, "Feedback is an opinion grounded in observations and experiences, which allows us to know what impression we make on others. To reap the full benefits of OKRs, feedback must be integral to the process. If you don't know how well you're performing, how can you possibly get better?" Today's workers want to be empowered and inspired, not told what to do. They want to provide feedback to their managers, not wait for a year to receive feedback from their managers. They want to discuss their goals on a regular basis, share them with others, and track progress from peers. Public, transparent OKRs will trigger good questions from all directions. Are these the right things for me, you, us to be focused on? If I, you, we complete them, will it be seen as a huge success? Do you have any feedback on how I or we could stretch even more? Feedback can be highly constructive, but only if it's specific. For example, negative feedback. "You started the meeting late last week and it came off as disorganized." An example of positive feedback: "You did a great job with the presentation. You really grabbed their attention with your opening story, and I loved how you closed with the next steps for action." In developing organizations, feedback is generally led by HR and often scheduled. In more mature organizations, feedback is ad hoc, real-time, and multi-directional, an open dialogue between people anywhere in the organization. If we can rate our Uber drivers and vice versa, and even rate the raters on Yelp, why can't a workplace support two-way feedback between managers and employees? It's a precious opportunity for people to say to their leaders, "What do you need from me to be successful? And now let me tell you what I need from you." Not so many years ago, employees made their voices heard by slipping unsigned notes into the office suggestion box. Today, progressive companies have replaced the box with always-on anonymous feedback tools, ranging from quick-hitting employee surveys to anonymous social networks and even rating apps for meetings and meeting organizers. Peer-to-peer, or 360 feedback, is an added lens for continuous performance management. It can be anonymous, or public, or somewhere in between. Is the feedback designed to help employees move forward in their careers? And if so, it's best channeled privately to the individuals. Is it meant to reveal an organization's problem areas? Here, it would go straight to HR. It's all a matter of context and purpose. By fostering connections among teams, peer feedback is especially valuable in cross-function initiatives. When horizontal communication blows open, interdepartmental teamwork becomes the new norm. As OKRs are combined with 360 feedback, silos become relics of the past. Recognition. Here is the most underestimated component of CFRs, and the least well understood. Long gone are the days when gold watches were coveted awards for simple longevity. Modern recognition is performance-based and horizontal. It crowdsources meritocracy. When JetBlue installed a value-driven peer-to-peer recognition system and leaders began noticing people who'd flown under their radar, metrics for employee satisfaction nearly doubled. Continuous recognition is a powerful driver of engagement. As soft as it seems, saying thank you is an extraordinary tool to building an engaged team. High recognition companies have 31% lower voluntary turnover than companies with poor recognition cultures. Here are some ways to implement it. 1. Institute peer-to-peer recognition. When employee achievements are consistently recognized by peers, a culture of gratitude is born. At Zoom Pizza, the Friday all-hands roundup meeting concludes with a series of unsolicited, unedited shout-outs from anyone in the organization to anyone who's done something remarkable. 2. Establish clear criteria. Recognize people for actions and results, completion of special projects, achievement of company goals, demonstrations of the company values. Replace the employee of the month with the achievement of the month. 3. Share recognition stories. Newsletters or company blogs can supply the narrative behind the accomplishment, giving recognition more meaning. 4. Make recognition frequent and attainable. Hail smaller accomplishments, too. That extra effort to meet a deadline. That special polish on a proposal. The little things a manager might take for granted. 5. Tie recognition to company goals and strategies. Customer service, innovation, teamwork, cost-cutting, any organization priority can be supported by a timely shout-out. OKR platforms are custom-built for peer-to-peer recognition. Quarterly goals establish and reestablish areas where feedback and recognition are most valued. And transparent OKRs make it natural for coworkers to celebrate big wins and smaller triumphs alike. All deserve their share of the limelight. Once teams and departments start connecting in this fashion, more and more people get on board, and a recognition engine can rev up an entire company. Anyone can cheer anyone else's goal, irrespective of title or department. And mark this well. Every cheer is a step towards operating excellence, the crowning purpose of OKRs and CFRs. Chapter 16. Ditching annual performance reviews. It's the Adobe story. With Donna Morris, Executive Vice President of Customer and Employee Experience. 6 years ago, like most businesses, the software company Adobe was saddled with antiquated annual performance reviews. Managers invested 8 hours per employee and demoralized everyone involved. Voluntary attrition spiked every February as waves of contributors reacted to disappointing reviews by taking their talent elsewhere. In all, the company devoted a total of 80,000 manager hours, the equivalent of nearly 40 full-time hires, to a mechanical process that created no discernible value. Adobe was transitioning full speed ahead to a cloud-based subscription business model, which it needed to keep winning. But even as the company moved its products and customer relations into a contemporary real-time operation, its approach to HR remained shackled to the past. In 2012, during a business trip to India, an Adobe executive named Donna Morris vented her frustrations over traditional performance management. Her guard was lowered by jet lag, and she told a reporter that the company planned to abolish annual reviews and stack rankings in favor of more frequent, forward-facing feedback. It was a great idea. The catch was she hadn't yet discussed it with her HR staff or with Adobe's CEO. With characteristic energy and persuasiveness, Donna hustled to bring the company around. As she wrote on Adobe's intranet, the challenge at hand was to, quote, review contributions, reward accomplishments, and give and receive feedback. Do they need to be conflated into a cumbersome process? I don't think so. It's time to think radically differently. If we did away with our annual review, What would you like to see in its place? What would it look like to inspire, motivate, and value contributions more effectively? Her post sparked one of the most widely engaged discussions in company history. Donna's candor became the catalyst for Check-In, Adobe's new mode of continuous performance management. In a collective effort to move the company forward, managers, employees, and peers join in multiple check-in conversations each year. Instead of falling back on the HR team, leaders throughout the organization take proactive ownership of the process. Lightweight, flexible, and transparent, with minimal structure and no tracking or paperwork, Check-In features three focus areas: quarterly goals and expectations, that's Adobe speak for OKRs, regular feedback, and career development and growth. Sessions are called by contributors and decoupled from compensation. Forced distribution stack rankings have been replaced by an annual rewards check-in. Managers are trained to scale compensation based on employees' performance, their impact on the business, the relative scarcity of their skills, and market conditions. There are no fixed guidelines. Since the fall of 2012, when Check-In was installed, Adobe's voluntary attrition has dropped sharply. By implementing continuous performance management with CFRs, Adobe has invigorated its entire business operation.
Donna Morris. Adobe was founded on four core values: genuine, exceptional, innovative, and involved. Our old annual review process contradicted every one of them. So I said to our people, what if there were no ratings and no rankings and no forms? Instead, what if you all knew what was expected of you and had the opportunity to grow your career at Adobe, where each of you is so valued? Check-In has helped us to live Adobe's values every day. To explain how the new process worked, we kicked it off with the first of a series of 30 to 60 minute web training conferences. We rolled them out to senior leaders, then managers, then employees. We had a 90% employee participation rate. Each quarter, we've addressed a different phase of Check-In, from setting expectations to giving and receiving feedback. We've also invested in an employee resource center, which offers templates and videos to help our people build their constructive feedback skill set. Adobe has a lot of engineers who weren't necessarily experienced with open dialogue. The center has helped them ease into the process. Our leaders role-modeled Check-In. They needed to show they were open to feedback themselves and comfortable being questioned on their vision. Now we treat every manager as a business leader. They're allocated budgets for base incentives and equity, a pool of money to be distributed as they see fit. It's super empowering for them to know they are truly responsible for their reports. It's equally empowering for employees to know they have input into the process. By scheduling regular check-ins through the year, they keep their manager apprised of their progress against action items and goals from prior conversations, along with development needs and ideas for how they might grow. And now that we've done away with fixed pots of compensation, teammates are no longer competitors. Individuals want to drive their own success. They don't want to wait till the end of the year to be graded. They want to know how they're doing while they're doing it, and also what they need to do differently. Under our new system, our contributors get highly specific performance feedback at least once every 6 weeks. But in practice, it happens every week. Everybody knows where they stand and how they're contributing value to the company. Instead of lagging, the performance management process is leading. Our feedback under Check-In is often manager to employee, but it can be flipped to employee to manager. I felt like I was out on a limb with Project X and needed more support. And because Adobe is heavily matrixed, feedback can also be peer-to-peer. In my department, for example, I have a communication partner, a finance partner, and a legal partner. While they report to other people, there are strong dotted lines between us. We review our expectations and give one another feedback on our performance. From Adobe's experience, I'd say that a continuous performance management system has three requirements. The first is executive support. The second is clarity on company objectives and how they align with individual priorities, as set out in our goals and expectations, which equate to OKRs. The third is an investment in training to equip managers and leaders to be more effective. We're not shipping people out to courses. We're steering them to one-hour sessions online with role-played vignettes. Do you need to give difficult feedback? Here are the steps. Corrective feedback is naturally difficult for people. But when done well, it's also the greatest gift you can give to someone because it can change people's mindset and modify their behavior in the most positive, valuable way. We're creating an environment where people say, you know what, it's okay to make a mistake, because that's how I'm going to grow the most. That's a big part of our culture change. As Check-In makes clear, HR leaders exist for the success of the business. Our role is to consult with other leaders on how to make all of our constituents successful in fulfilling the company's mission. Success isn't built by forms and rankings and ratings. It's not driven by policies and programs that bog people down and get in their way. The true mechanisms for success are the ones that build capabilities and enable people to deliver for the company. For a service business, nothing is more valuable than engaged employees who feel they can make a difference and want to stay with the organization. Turnover is costly. The best turnover is internal turnover, where people are growing their careers within your enterprise rather than moving someplace else. People aren't wired to be nomads. They just need to find a place where they feel they can make a real impact. At Adobe, Check-In is making that happen. Adobe Performance Management, then and now. Setting priorities before the annual performance review. Employee priorities set at the start of the year and often not revisited. After, check-in. Priorities set and adjusted with manager regularly. Feedback process. Annual performance review. Long process of submitting accomplishments, soliciting feedback, and writing reviews. Check-in. Ongoing process of feedback and dialogue with no formal written review of documentation. Compensation decisions. The annual performance review. Onerous process of rating and ranking each employee to determine salary increase and equity. Check-in. No formal rating or ranking. Manager determines salary and equity annually based on performance. Cadence of meetings. The annual performance review. Feedback sessions inconsistent and not monitored. Spike in employee productivity at the end of the year, timed with performance review discussions. Check-in. Feedback conversations expected quarterly, with ongoing feedback becoming the norm. Consistent employee productivity based on ongoing discussions and feedback throughout the year. HR team role. The annual performance review, HR team managed paperwork and processes to ensure all steps were completed. Check-in, HR team equips employees and managers to have constructive conversations. Training and resources. The annual performance review. Managed coaching and resources came from HR partners who couldn't always reach everyone. Check-in. A centralized employee resource center provides help and answers whenever needed.
Chapter 17. Baking Better Every Day. The Zoom Pizza Story. With Julia Collins and Alex Garten, the co-founders and co-CEOs. As you've heard, OKRs and CFRs are proven vehicles for high performance and exponential growth. They also have more subtle, internal, quotidian effects, like grooming better executives or giving less vocal contributors an opportunity to shine. On the long and demanding road to operating excellence, they help organizations improve each and every day. Leaders become better communicators and motivators. Contributors grow into more disciplined, rigorous thinkers. When imbued with meaningful conversations and feedback, structured goal setting teaches people how to work within constraints, even as they push against them. An especially critical lesson for smaller scaling operations. Our next story vividly illustrates these internal dynamics. It's about a startup using OKRs and CFRs, plus a few robots, to take on the giants of its industry. For some time now, the $10 billion U.S. pizza delivery market has been controlled by three national chains: Domino's, Pizza Hut, and Papa John's. They aren't life-altering pizzas, but their brands are well-established and own the great advantage of economies of scale. In the spring of 2016, when Zoom Pizza opened for business in an out-of-the-way concrete bunker in Silicon Valley, skeptics came out in droves. Roboticized artisanal pizza was derided as a left-coast gimmick. The odds for success seemed long. Going on 2 years later, Zoom is beating those odds by making world-class pizza at a competitive price. The company assigns rote tasks to machines, freeing its people for creative jobs that add more value. The dollars saved on manual labor get plowed into higher quality ingredients, dough from non-GMO flowers, organically grown tomatoes, locally sourced vegetables, and healthfully cured meats. The result is a tastier pizza that's actually good for you, and that arrives, still hot, in as little as 5 minutes after you input your order. As online or mobile app orders link into Zoom's conveyor belt, robots stretch and shape the dough, apply the sauce, and safely slide the pizzas into an 800-degree oven. With the robotics technology continuing to mature, the company plans to automate the entire process, from adding cheese and custom toppings to loading the partly baked pies into Zoom's fleet of algorithmically operated baking-on-the-way trucks. And in the future, there's a fair chance those trucks will be driverless. Within 3 months of launch, Zoom had achieved 10% market share in its local trade area. In 2018, it began disrupting the pizza oligopoly across the Bay Area. Soon it will roll out across the West Coast and then nationally. By 2019, the founders hope to be overseas. Quote, "We're going to be the Amazon of food," says co-founder Alex Garden, who first met OKRs as the president of Zynga Studios. When you're David taking on Goliath, time and opportunity are of the essence. There's no margin for unfocused operations or misaligned staff. And as Zoom's leaders will tell you, OKRs have helped their young company to thrive in ways they could not have foreseen.
In the beginning, Zoom lived in our two heads. If you asked Alex and me any question, we would give you the same answer. We spent so much time together that everything was understood. Well, that works fine with two people. After our CTO came on board and we became the three cheeses, it still worked really well. But once we added Parmigiano Reggiano to the mozzarella, Romano, and provolone, something changed. By the time we had seven people, if you asked us, "What's the main thing we need to accomplish today?" Well, you'd get eight different answers. We started with a project management software called Liquid Planner, a waterfall methodology. It really helped build out our kitchen. First, you pour the concrete and let it dry. Then you put on the epoxy and let that dry. Then you cover it all and install the walk-in refrigerator box, right? For a linear process, it's fantastic. But by June of 2016, as we prepared to launch, Zoom was a more complex operation. We were up to 16 salaried employees, plus another 36 hourly kitchen workers and pilots, the indispensable people who deliver our pizza. We'd ventured into large-scale manufacturing, plus integrating robots, plus developing software, plus creating a menu, and the waterfall stopped flowing so smoothly.
Too many things were happening at once, with lots of layers of interdependencies. We knew we had to stay agile, and our engineers checked in on Jira's project management software each morning for their 2-week sprints. But neither Jira nor Liquid Planner could answer one big question. What's the most important thing to do? Zoom's biggest asset is our talented and creative team. Left to their own devices, our folks would jump into what they thought was most important. Their ideas were often good, but not always in sync. We implemented OKRs early in our life cycle, 3 weeks after the first pizza went out the door, because we wanted to be sure that everyone knew our top priorities. In the beginning, to make sure that mission-critical things got done, Alex and I set a standard of 100% top-down alignment. The two of us created Zoom's objectives for our first two OKR cycles. Going forward, as survival becomes less of an issue, we'll loosen up a little bit.
Achieving what's real. It's hard to deny the explicit value of OKRs, like how they help tie an organization to the leadership's true ambitions. But for young companies like Zoom, especially, there's an equally important implicit value that gets overlooked. OKRs are a superb training tool for executives and managers. They teach you how to manage your business within existing limits. It's important to push the envelope, but the envelope is real. Everybody faces resource constraints, time, money, people. And the bigger an organization, the more entropy. It's like thermodynamics. During my stint as general manager at Microsoft's Xbox Live, I worked with some visionary executives, but we struggled from a misalignment between the leader's desires and the capabilities of the organization. The hows, and most of the whats as well, were left to me and some other divisional foot soldiers. It was our job to execute an impractically framed mandate for an overscoped mission. If we'd had a well-constructed goal-setting process from the start, it might have saved everyone a lot of grief. Old-school business models suggest that your role as an executive gets more abstract as you rise in the ranks. Your middle managers buffer you from the operational day-to-day, freeing you to focus more on the big picture. Maybe that worked in a slower-paced era, but in my experience, OKRs can't be effective unless the people at the top are unconditionally committed, like a religious calling. And proselytizing is hard and thankless work. Your people may not like you very much through the adoption curve, which can take up to a year, but it's worth it.
Better discipline. If we're talking about the intrinsic value of OKRs, what comes before anything is the discipline that they instill in us as co-founders.
They train us to be thoughtful about what we can actually achieve, and to instill the same outlook in our executive team and their teams. Early on in your career, when you're an individual contributor, you're graded on the volume and quality of your work. Then, one day, all of a sudden, you're a manager. Let's assume you do well and you move up to manage more and more people. Now, you're no longer paid for the amount of work you do. You're paid for the quality of the decisions you make. But no one tells you the rules have changed. When you hit a wall, you think, I'll just work harder. That's what got me here. What you should do is more counterintuitive. Stop for a moment and shut out the noise. Close your eyes to really see what's in front of you, and then pick the best way forward for you and your team relative to your organization's needs. What's neat about OKRs is that they formalize reflection. At least once a quarter, they make contributors step back into a quiet place and consider how their decisions align with the company. People start thinking in the macro. They become more pointed and precise. Because you can't write a 90-page OKR dissertation, you have to choose 3 to 5 things and exactly how they should be measured. Then, when the day comes and someone says, okay, you're a manager, you've already learned how to think like one, and that's huge. Most startups aren't too eager to plunge into a structured goal-setting process. We don't need that. We go super fast. We just figure stuff out. And often they do figure it out. But I think they're missing an opportunity to teach people how to be executives before the company scales. If those habits aren't ingrained early on, one of two things happens. Unsuccessful companies scale beyond the leadership team's capacity, and they die. Successful companies scale beyond the team's abilities and the team gets replaced. Those are both sad outcomes. The better way is to train people to think like leaders from the start when their departments have a staff of one. So, OKRs forge your people. They mint stronger executives and help them avoid rookie mistakes. They implant rigor and rhythm of a very large company into the framework of a very small company. When we implemented OKRs at Zoom, the immediate benefit was the process itself. The simple act of forcing people to think about the business thoughtfully, transparently, interdependently, was a huge accelerant to their performance. Better engagement. OKRs take out the ambiguity, and when you do that, some people will say, "This isn't what I thought I signed up for, and I'm leaving." But others will say, "I'm inspired because I finally know what we're trying to do." Either way, there's clarity. For those who stay, you've laid the foundation for engagement. Everyone's bought into the mission. Team sports don't work unless the whole team plays together.
As people get more familiar with the OKR process, it naturally gets more collaborative. In Q3 of 2016, Alex and I wrote the top company OKRs, and the department heads converted some of our key results into their own objectives. We just cascaded them down. In Q4, the two of us still wrote the company objectives, but our team jumped in and KR'd them from the top, which was great. They took on a more creative role, and the OKRs got better. Our goals were still stretched, but people felt like they were more realistic. Zoom calls its key technology baking on the way. That's where we disrupt the industry and create the most delight for our customers. In Q4, a top company objective was to deploy our big guys, the 26-foot trucks with 56 ovens linked to a sophisticated logistics and order prediction system. They enable us to finish your pizza algorithmically in as little as 5 minutes after your online order and have it ready and still steaming as we pull up to your door. Vipav Goel, our product manager, owned an OKR to order, coordinate, and fulfill the first flotilla of our baking on the way fleet. It was airtight. If Vipav attained his 3 KRs, we knew we'd reach our objective. Our objective was complete the truck delivery fleet for 250 Polaris, our Mountain View headquarters. Our key results were: 1, deliver 126 fully certified ovens by November 30th. 2, deliver 11 fully certified racks by November 30th. And 3, deliver 2 fully certified full format delivery vehicles by November 30th. Every organization has people who are more vocal in asserting themselves. If they don't win their point the first time, they're comfortable saying it again. But quieter folks may not be heard so well, and their needs can get neglected. The OKR framework gives equal voice and weight to each department. No one needs to suffer in silence. Truthfully, no one has that option. Your objectives will get their turn up on the screen, just like everyone else's, for comment and support. I'd add that a really good company values different opinions. It mines for dissent, and it finds a way to bring it to the surface and mine it out. That's how we foster a meritocracy.
Before rolling OKRs out to our individual contributors, we put in 2 full quarters at the executive level. We had to establish the culture first. What we found, oddly enough, is that our most active participants were the ones who were initially the most skeptical.
I thought it was another diet program. Oh, just follow this process and you'll be thin and beautiful. It felt like bookkeeping, one more administrative exercise. But OKRs had an effect on me I didn't expect. When I did my biweekly check-ins, it gave me a couple minutes to think about what I was doing and how my goals rolled up to what the company needed for the quarter. At a startup, you can get lost in tactical minutiae, especially in my department, where we wear so many hats. That's dangerous because you're swimming in tumultuous seas and it's easy to lose sight of land. But those OKR meditations help me reset my compass. How do I contribute to the scheme of things? Then it's not just another report or campaign or field event. It connects to something bigger and more meaningful. Joseph Suzuki, Director of Marketing, Zoom Pizza.
Better transparency. From the beginning, the process forced us to clarify who's in charge of what. When a fly ball is hit between two outfielders, somebody's got to call for it, or else the ball drops in, or both people dive for it and crash into each other. Early on, our fielders were marketing and product. But who was responsible for Zoom's revenue targets? The two leads had been with us 1 month apiece. Not only were they new to OKRs, but they were also new to Zoom, and Zoom was new to itself. When Alex and I saw their confusion, we broke the objective out into new revenue, marketing, and repeat revenue, product. And the department heads drilled down from there. That was an important conversation. It wasn't linked to an objective per se, but it was absolutely a byproduct of an early stage OKR process. When something isn't clearly delineated, it shows up right away. You can't miss it.
Better teamwork. In 8 months, we launched a food company, a logistics company, a robotics company, and a manufacturing company from a standing start. We used OKRs as a teaching tool to impart a culture of consideration. They make you start thinking reflexively about how the work you're doing affects those around you and how you're dependent on them too.
Our team is very eclectic. Our executive chef, Aaron Butkus, came up through mom-and-pop restaurants around New York City. Our fleet manager, Mike Bassoni, worked in movie production. We've got a product wonk and a software engineer, and everyone came in speaking different languages. OKRs were our Esperanto, our shared vocabulary. The seven-member leadership team meets over lunch every Monday, and about every other week, we discuss our OKRs. You hear people saying things like, who owns the customer? Or, how would you key result that goal? And everyone knows just what they mean. The most delicious pie in the world won't make people happy if it gets to them cold. Mike and Aaron own a shared objective for customer satisfaction. Mike might say, I've got a key result for expanding our delivery radius, and now it's at risk. Maybe the manufacturing team was delayed in getting a vehicle online. So now we'll have a collective conversation on how the late deployment is affecting our service area and revenue stream, which also ties in to Joe Suzuki, our marketing lead, and his OKR to increase top-line revenue. In another life, Mike might have called out the manufacturing lead, what the hell? Can you hurry up and get this done? I've been waiting forever. When you say instead, my KR is at risk, it's less charged and more constructive. Since our company has total alignment, the entire team has already agreed to the key result and the dependency it entails. There's no judgment, just a problem to be solved. And guess what else happens? The two leads will advocate for each other to get more resources from Alex and me.
Aaron Butkus, Executive Chef. If I'm creating a new seasonal pie, I can't just do it on the spur. Marketing needs to know at least a week ahead of time, and then photo and design have to take pictures. It affects every department, the product manager's website, the tech team, and their mobile app. The OKRs keep me centered and on track. They guarantee that I get the recipe done in time for everyone who's waiting on it. My deadline's built into a key result. I can see the bigger picture more clearly. It's definitely a team-building process. It reminds you that you're a part of this little weird community. It's easy to get caught up in your own issues, especially when you're working in the kitchen. But OKRs get people to think, oh yeah, we're working together on this. We're working together on everything.
Better conversations. Every 2 weeks, each person at Zoom has a 1 hour, one-on-one conversation with whomever they report to. Julia and I converse with each other. It's a sacred time. You cannot be late. You cannot cancel. There's only one other rule. You don't talk about work. The agenda is you, the individual, and what you're trying to accomplish personally over the next 2 to 3 years and how you're breaking that into a 2-week plan. I like to start with 3 questions. 1, what makes you very happy? 2, what saps your energy? 3, how would you describe your dream job? Then I say, look, I want to tell you what my expectations are. Number 1, always tell the truth. Number two, always do the right thing. If you meet those expectations, we'll unconditionally back you 100% of the time. And I will personally guarantee you, you're going to achieve your next set of personal and professional goals over the next 3 years. And we go from there. People might see this as altruism, but it's actually a powerful way to get people connected to the business and to keep them from churning out. It gives them insights around obstacles. A leader might say, "This goal seems very important to you, but you didn't make a lot of progress on it in the last 2 weeks. Why is that?" It may seem paradoxical, but these non-work touchpoint one-on-ones are a forum for ongoing performance feedback. In talking about people's pursuit of personal goals, you end up learning a lot about what moves them forward or holds them back in their careers. When you're having regular, deeper conversations, you get a sense of when you need to turn the dial and give people a chance to charge their batteries. After the organization has completed an all-out sprint, you might dial up contributors' time for personal development goals, say from 5% to 15 or 20% in the next quarter. It might sound like a huge tax, but it'll set up the company's next 2 or 3 quarters of execution.
Better culture. Culture is the common language that allows for individuals in an organization to be sure they're all talking about the same thing, and that what they're talking about has meaning. Beyond that, culture establishes a common framework for decision-making. In its absence, people are at a loss for how to make key functions replicable and scalable. Then there's the more aspirational layer of culture, the values conversation. Who do we want to be as an organization? How do we want people to feel about their work and about our product? What's the impact that we want to make in the world?
Zoom's founding principles, our mission, are two things Julia said to me on the phone when we were first introduced. They made such an impression on me that we put them up on a gigantic poster on our kitchen wall. The first was, serving food to people is a sacred trust. And the second, every American has a right to delicious, affordable, healthy food. Here's an OKR that flowed directly from our mission. The objective was to delight customers. The detail was that feeding people is a sacred trust. To maintain that trust, we have to deliver the very best customer service and the very best food quality. To succeed as a business, we must ensure that our customers are so happy with our service and our product that they have no choice but to order more pizza and to rave about the experience with their friends. We measured that with 3 key results. Number 1, a net promoter score of 42 or better. Number 2, an order rating of 4.6 out of 5 or better. And number 3, 75% of customers prefer Zoom to a competitor in a blind taste test.
There are so many daily decisions that are governed by our mission. It would be easy to use a tiny bit more salt in our pizzas or add a little bit of sugar to the sauce rather than going the extra mile to find the freshest tomatoes. Those are the small, insidious compromises that can creep into an organization and undermine who you are. Every new employee goes through mission and values training as part of their onboarding. Alex and I are very clear about what we expect from our people. And our clarity forces us to be highly accountable as an organization and as individuals. We have a best idea wins culture, and people are free to call out anybody, including the CEO.
Especially the CEO. That's the best call out there is. When people challenge us in an open forum, we always stop and make a huge big deal about how impressive it is that the person spoke up. We try to overdo it to create permission for people to lean in.
Better leaders. I've worked for some great leaders in my day. They were all very different, but the one thing they had in common was this cold, sober focus. If you sat down with them for 20 minutes, they were completely uncluttered in their thinking. They could drill down very clearly on what needed to be done. When you're fundraising and making pizza with robots and building out kitchens, there's a lot of rapid context switching. It can feel a little frenetic at times. But when you know your company objectives like you know your last name, it's very calming. OKRs help me to be that focused, clear-headed leader. no matter how crazy things get, I can always default back to what matters.
Chapter 18. Culture. Jeff Bezos says, you need a culture that high-fives small and innovative ideas. Culture, as the saying goes, eats strategy for breakfast. It's our stake in the ground. It's what makes meaning of work. Leaders are rightly obsessed with culture. Founders ask how they can protect their company's cultural values as they grow. Chiefs of large companies are turning to OKRs and CFRs as tools for culture change. And growing numbers of job seekers and career builders are making the right cultural fit their top criterion. As you've heard throughout this book, OKRs are clear vessels for leaders' priorities and insights. CFRs help ensure that those priorities and insights get transmitted. But goals just cannot be attained in a vacuum. Like sound waves, they require a medium. So for OKRs and CFRs, the medium is the organization's culture, the living expression of its most cherished values and beliefs. And so the question becomes, how do companies define and build a positive culture? While I have no simple answer, OKRs and CFRs provide a blueprint. By aligning teams to work towards a handful of common objectives and then uniting them through lightweight, goal-oriented communications, OKRs and CFRs create transparency and accountability, the tentpoles for sustained high performance. Healthy culture and structured goal setting are interdependent. They are natural partners in the quest for operating excellence. Andy Grove understood the paramount importance of this interplay. Put simply, he wrote in High Output Management, culture is a set of values and beliefs, as well as familiarity with the way things are done and should be done in a company. The point is that a strong and positive corporate culture is absolutely essential. As an engineer, Grove equated culture with efficiency, a manual for quicker, more reliable decisions. When a company is culturally coherent, the way forward is understood. He said,
someone adhering to the values of a corporate culture, an intelligent corporate citizen, will behave in consistent fashion under similar conditions, which means that managers don't have to suffer the inefficiencies engendered by formal rules, procedures, and regulations. As for cultural values, management has to develop and nurture the common set of values, objectives, and methods essential to the existence of trust. How do we do that? One way is by articulation, by spelling them out. The other, even more important way is by example.
As an executive, Grove role-modeled Intel's highest cultural standards. In his IOPEC seminars, he endeavored to instill them in the company's new employees. You're about to hear an outline of Andy's teachings on Intel's seven core cultural values, these from a presentation in 1985.
Operating style or value system. People-oriented. We value a strong mutual commitment, respect for all work, challenge and opportunity. Openness. Highlighting of problems or issues expected. Issue resolution. Clean and crisp. Confrontation must be constructive. Result. Output orientation in all work. Superficiality not respected. Rewards successes with positive feedback. Discipline. Excellence in a highly competitive, complex environment demands it. Risk-taking. High technology orientation necessitates it. Low fear of failing, self-exposure. Champions. Trust and integrity.
The qualities prized by Andy Grove, collectively accountability, fearless risk-taking, and measurable achievement, are also highly esteemed at Google. In Project Aristotle, an internal Google study of 180 teams, standout, outstanding performance correlated to affirmative responses to these five questions. Number one, structure and clarity. Are goals, roles, and execution plans